60% of Wisconsin residents live in the 38 cities and villages that have populations of more than 30,000. So a new report on the state of Wisconsin cities and villages is important. That report was commissioned by the League of Wisconsin Municipalities and done by the Wisconsin Taxpayers Alliance. So to talk about that report, my thanks to Jerry DeShane, Executive Director of the League of Wisconsin Municipalities, and Todd Berry, President, Wisconsin Taxpayer Alliance. Gentlemen, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Jerry, you commissioned the report done by Todd's shop.
Yep.
Why did you want this information?
The League and its members want to get a handle on where we're at. We came out of the 2009 recession. Revenues are tight. Populations are flat or declining. Where are cities and villages? This is the first year of an ongoing progression of research.
Okay. Todd, talk about the methodology. Is this something you do
often?
We don't do
a lot of this kind of outside work just because we aren't big and we have other things to do, but we really enjoy doing this kind of work because we always learn more from being in the trenches that helps our work. And this was particularly interesting because I don't think that local city village officials have been surveyed, if at all, to this extent for a long time. And the reason is, well, there's so many municipalities in Wisconsin, and so many of them are small, part-time. It's hard to, you know, find somebody in the office.
Yeah, the report says we run the continuum from 600,000 in Milwaukee to 67 in which village?
The village of Stockholm.
Oh, okay.
I stumbled. I should have that top of my tongue.
But that's a pretty big continuum.
Yes.
There. It's interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, let's start. Well, as I said, I learned a lot from this report. I didn't know that 62% of all of our residents live in those 38 villages and cities with populations of more than 30,000. Mm-hmm. But I was also intrigued. The first thing I want to talk about, you framed 2014 in terms of sources mm-hmm. of the four, let me get the number right, sources of the $4.8 billion that all cities and villages spent. Mm-hmm. So let's talk about where that money came from. 57% came from property taxes. Is that up or down? Surprise?
It's about what I would think, but the trend has clearly been one of incremental rise because we know that state aids have been frozen and down depending on the year, and for the most part, municipalities have two sources of revenue: property taxes or state aid. The rest,
right.
You know, fees.
Right, Jerry. When we talk about property taxes, all municipalities and school districts have been living with levy limits.
Mm-hmm.
What's been the effect of those levy limits? Pretty tight handcuffs on your municipalities, your members?
Absolutely, very tight handcuffs. And it's striking those smallest of the small harder than the largest. Our flagship cities are actually doing okay. They're doing fairly well. But if you look at overall revenues over the four-year period that we studied, local revenues went up, what was it, Todd? Something like
2%.
2%.
Yeah. Now, to compare that, at the same time, state revenue went up 8%.
Fourfold.
Fourfold.
Yeah. Okay, let's go back to that because I think it's important. First of all, Jerry, when you say your largest cities, are you talking about the 12 cities that each have more than 50,000 residents?
Yeah.
Okay, now let's talk about that fourfold relationship. Mm-hmm. What grew by two? I understand state revenues, tax collections grew by eight. No, I'm sorry. Do I have the right number?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What grew by two?
All revenues to local government. All revenue, city and villages.
That's a pretty big disparity.
And actually, property taxes have been growing at an annual average less than that. And that's, of course, because if you have no new construction in your municipality, your levy is frozen, zero.
Yes.
If anything, that rate of increase of state tax collections is understated because there were some tax cuts in there too. But, you know, in a normal year then, you're going to see local property taxes, municipal, going up 1-2%. You're going to see state income and sales taxes growing 4-5%.
They're on track
6%.
To grow 4%, according to the Fiscal Bureau.
Yeah. So the state has definitely put locals on a diet. And as Jerry says, many of them, you know, have handled it okay. But the state isn't on the same diet.
Well, which is interesting because, okay, sources of city and village spending, 57% property taxes, then 21% state aid. But when you go deeper on that, shared revenue is 14%, transportation aid's 4%, other state aid's 3%. Mm-hmm. Then you get to fees. What are we talking about when we talk about fees here, gentlemen?
Well, it could be anything. It could be, you know, parking tickets.
Building permit fees.
Yeah.
Garbage removal, is that in there?
Well, yep, if they have it, yeah.
But the legislature placed limitations on fee revenue as well.
Yes.
That essentially a local government in Wisconsin can't establish a new fee now without taking an equal amount of revenue out of the property tax base. Mm-hmm. So it's a zero-sum game. Mm-hmm. But, you know, even in light of that, local governments have done a good job. They focused on the basics, really haven't sacrificed in terms of police and fire protection, EMS service. The response times, according to the survey, are the same or better than they've been. So overall, I would have to give them fairly high marks for frugality.
It's a little bit under the surface where the story gets interesting, because if your revenues are limited, you know, you become more efficient, you try to find ways to deliver services, better services at lower cost. But at the same time, we know that debt service has grown dramatically over the last 10 to 15 years.
Yeah, we're going to get to that in a minute.
Yeah. But that's one thing. The other thing is that within local budgets, you see that there are shifts in priorities. They're maintaining spending and they're maintaining service levels for public safety, police, and fire. But on the margin, it's the other stuff that has sometimes been sort of pulled back on. So we see some evidence that, for instance, there might be a little less snow plowing going on, or a little less lawn mowing. So, I mean, they're rightly providing the things that the public wants most, you know, police and fire protection, but they're having to start to shave around the edges of other stuff.
And lawn mowing is something, those are services that people see. They recognize that. Right. I want to finish up with a discussion of where the money comes from. I was surprised, federal aid, only 2%?
Yeah.
What's the nature of that federal aid, Ted?
You know, I'm not even sure. It could be individual, Congress will earmark certain monies for certain communities, so there's probably some of that. Community development, block grants was the other thing that was going to occur.
Oh, block grants, okay.
But no, you know, that, and that's really not uncommon throughout Wisconsin. Wisconsin historically is in the bottom 5, 10, 15 states in the country in terms of receipt of federal money. You know, schools outside of Milwaukee, the percentage isn't much higher than that.
Okay, now we can turn to how that $4.8 billion was spent, and let's get in return to some of these issues. The number one category of spending by cities and counties is on public safety, police, fire, and emergency services, 31.4%. So my question is, has this expanded in light of the post 9/11 era? Have our cities and villages been hiring more police officers?
Mm-hmm. The percentage of the budget is, I mean, it's up a little bit, down a little bit, but it's holding in at about that percentage. I think, if I recall, we saw some evidence that there was a little bit of more hiring going on for police and fire. But again, one of the themes of the study is you can't generalize, because large municipalities in some parts of the state may be doing better than isolated small municipalities in other parts of the state.
Okay. Yeah, and that's something, as we go forward next year and the year after and the year after, we want to take a closer look at, we know our flagship cities are on one trajectory and those small cities are on another. So it's really hard to compare. Fire departments in Crivitz, Wisconsin are worlds different than the fire department in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. And so it becomes hard to do an apples to apples comparison. I would say the little bit of hiring we're seeing is more a rebound from the recession. We're starting to come out of that. As property taxes inch up that little bit, that's the first place they're going, is to fill some hiring needs that have been there for quite a while.
So our cities and villages have protected then their emergency services, police, fire, and other emergency services in the window that you studied. Mm-hmm. And it accounts for 31.4% of city and village spending. Number two, hey gentlemen, I was surprised. Debt service, payment on borrowed money, principal and interest, 21.7%. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And it got as high as 25.7% in 2012, according to your report, Todd. Is it prudent for to have our villages and cities number two spending priority debt service?
Well, you know, nobody wants to take on debt, but I think one thing that should be said about municipalities is the debt that they do take on is for real nuts and bolts kind of stuff, you know, rebuilding streets, extending sewer lines. So, I mean, it's a little different than the federal government that writes a blank check and the debt goes up for everything. So, I mean, it's definitely, you know, infrastructure and fairly targeted. But the other thing, of course, that's going on is if you have a levy freeze or a near levy freeze and you need to repair a street and you can't levy for it, and the state aid is going down, then you know, issue bonds for it.
Right.
And that's a legitimate use of debt.
The other piece of this, and Todd, correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe tax increment finance debt is included in that number.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And
that would be a major factor. Excuse me, Jerry.
Yeah, and TIF districts, an operating TIF district, is essentially paying for itself. It's paying as it goes. And TIF is, we've said it before, it's the only economic development tool a community has, especially those small communities.
Yes, and the number of TIF districts has been growing. I've seen the stats on that from DOR.
I mean, the one thing that I think we as a state have to be a little careful about is that it used to be that, and I don't mean to be critical of municipal officials here, but I mean, my sense is that it used to be that TIF districts were considered a sure thing. And what we learned from the 2008-09-10 recession is that sometimes TIF districts don't develop and appreciate if the economy's falling apart. And as we noted in a recent study at the Taxpayers Alliance, we still haven't reached the level of total property value in this state this year as we had before the recession.
You put that out in a report this week based on the new DOR equalized values. While we're talking about debt service, on page 9 here, you said something that intrigued me. Municipalities with between 5,000 and 15,000 residents had the highest debt burden, with an average of $1,750 per resident. Yet, these smaller communities, aren't they the one that have the least new construction, the least job growth, according to what these administrators told you in your survey, and do they have the oldest residents?
Well, I think you got to be a little careful, because if you look at these data, and we're looking at the same data you are, if you look at the very smallest villages and cities, the ones with fewer than 1,000 people, their debt per capita is under $1,100 per person.
Okay.
Considerably
less. Thanks for the clarification.
A city or village of 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, when they're all sort of in that $1,600, $1,700 per capita, when you start to think about it around Wisconsin, we have a lot of suburban, growing kinds of communities that fit in this range. Mm-hmm. And so part of it, I think, is that depending on your location, if you're on the periphery of Milwaukee or Madison or Green Bay, that's where the development is occurring, that's where the new construction's occurring, and that's where you're going to have to build sidewalks, extend sewers, etc.
But one point of your report is there are a unique set of issues in some of our smallest villages.
Right, we're talking about the villages of 1,000 or smaller.
Okay.
In some of those, you're not seeing any or even possibly negative job growth. You know, they couldn't build a TIF district industrial park because nobody would come. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And yes, in a lot of those smallest of the smalls, you're not seeing a whole lot of young population. Population's aging quickly.
That was my next question. Do the older residents tend to live in these smaller villages, Jerry?
We don't have data but I think it's fair to say, because where you find these is in those sort of outstate regions where you start to have declining school enrollments And as students, you know, graduate high school, they don't come back.
Yes.
So
yes.
These are going to be more rural, more outstate. Yeah.
Okay, let's go back to how what our villages and cities spend money on. Number three was road maintenance and construction. I had thought that this would be number two, but debt service is number two. 13.8%, but let's bore down a little bit.
Some of the debt service could be for streets.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, when you asked some of these local administrators, and you got a better response from the larger communities mm-hmm. than the smaller communities, to compare their roads, there's three stats that I want to cite. They said, they called their streets excellent or very good. 37% of their streets were excellent or very good in 2010. That slipped to 31% mm-hmm. in 2015, mm-hmm. category one. Category two, in the good category for their streets, 34% in 2010, 37% in 2015, a bump up of 3 percentage mm-hmm. points. Fair, poor, or worse, 29% in 2010, 32% in 2015. Now, having done stories on the transportation problems of counties, it looks to me like our cities and villages are doing a little better but still slipping in maintaining their streets and highways?
Yeah, I mean, if you think of it, that's sort of a distribution from good to bad. And that you, if you think of it, it's sort of as a glacier. It's just sort of shifting, which means there's going to be fewer really excellent condition. Those are shifting down to good, and the goods are shifting down to fair or poor. So what you're seeing is slow erosion. And there have been years we have seen from state data in the last five where per capita spending for streets has in some years declined while it was growing for police and fire. And that hasn't happened every year, but what that says is they're deferring maintenance to some degree and they're ensuring public safety. And you know, as another statistic in this report is that if you merely have to, you know, tweak a street to keep it in good shape, maintain it, it costs far less than if you have to rebuild it, like the factor of four.
Go ahead.
Well, and I was about to say, this confirms what we've been hearing anecdotally for the past several years. You know, our grandfathers and fathers, grandmothers and grandfathers gave us this great road system. You know, we have more paved streets in Wisconsin than most states.
Yes.
You know, thanks to dairy farming, to be blunt with you. Mm-hmm. But what are we doing with that asset? What we're doing is we're slowly, mile by mile, deferring maintenance on it. And it's a WIS-DOT number, I believe.
These are,
that
yeah.
If you have to just tweak it, as Todd says, I'm not sure what that means in blacktop terms, it costs you $600,000 a mile. But if you've got to rebuild that road because you put off maintenance, it costs four times as much.
Right.
So that's the real danger. And to me, that's one of the big call-outs in this report.
I was going to ask you, is that one of the biggest concerns that you have based on Todd's research?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And I can tell you anecdotally, talking to mayors all over the state, they don't have the money to expand road maintenance budgets.
But this is part of the impasse in that capital. As the governor has said, no, we're not going to raise gas tax fees, even though they were last raised in 2006. We're not going to raise vehicle registration fees, even though they were last raised in 2008. So your cities and villages are very much caught up in this impasse, correct?
Very much so, and we're working with all sides to try to move that thing. I did notice, frankly, and we were very pleased to see the governor call out local roads, that we have got to focus on that. Now, our organization would say that I-39 is just as important as Main Street. Mm-hmm. You got to get the goods to Beloit and then get it off the street or get it off the highway and get it into Beloit. So the whole system matters. But yeah, we're hoping and hope this report helps mm-hmm. to move that discussion along.
Does the league have a position on how we pay for our transportation future, Jerry?
The league is part of the Just Fix It Coalition.
That's what I thought.
And
you want to explain what that is?
Yeah, just fix it.
Fix it how?
It's going to take a combination, Steve. We're going to have to find some efficiencies at the local level, at DOT, find design efficiencies. We're going to have to look at revenues. We're going to have to raise a gas tax, registration fee, and look at other alternatives. From the league's perspective, we're not wedded to one because we think a good compromise is going to take elements of all of the above.
Meanwhile, the reports are that there's a $1 billion shortfall in our transportation fund as we approach the next state budget. Okay.
I wanted to add just one thing.
Please,
that I think generally isn't getting said, and that is the gas tax and the vehicle registration fees, let's just be clear, they're not percentages of income or sales the way the state revenues are. They're fixed cent per gallon or flat license fees. So in inflation-adjusted terms, as labor costs go up, asphalt goes up, whatever, in effect, the revenues that are supporting our transportation system are going down. And that's true, by the way, of property taxes with levy limits. Controlled for inflation, the municipal property tax has actually been declining. So you get this strange sort of dichotomy where you have transportation revenues in real dollars declining, local property taxes in real dollars declining, and state sales and income taxes continuing to grow because they grow with the economy.
And just for background, our 30.9 cent gas tax, every 1 cent increase would bring in an additional $33.4 million. And if you raise the $75 annual vehicle registration fee by $10, it would bring in $42 million mm-hmm. there, but I'm wonking out on you guys.
But, the income tax will, $7, $8 billion. 1% of that is $70, $80 million.
And our sales tax revenues are just hitting $5 billion for the first time ever.
So
every
penny
is equal to a billion.
That the state has an inflation-proofed tax system that the transportation system and the local property tax system do not.
Okay. All right, let's go back to how the money is spent. We've talked about road maintenance and construction, general government, 9.1%. I don't know of any PSs on that.
Mm-hmm. No. That's
okay. Culture, parks, recreation, 8.2%. Did I notice there's a slight decrease in that spending in your report,
Mr. Berry? But remember that this is a category that won't even exist in some places and will exist, just to a certain degree in the very larger cities. So,
but I do want to make a pitch for that, because what economic development people are telling us is that your new entrepreneurs are looking for interesting places to live. We can't go to gray concrete wall cities. Cities have to be interesting. There have to be things going on in order for Wisconsin to attract people going into the future. And that really is our greatest challenge. So while this number is low, it always will be low, and it doesn't add up to police and fire and ambulance service, we shouldn't laugh it off or dismiss it. It is important.
Okay. And then the last category is other, that's the catch-all phrase, 15.7%. Okay, I want to come back to specific things that attracted my attention in this report. You scored Act 10 as saving the cities and villages between 90 and 100 million. Explain that time.
The main thing that Act 10 did, because it changed collective bargaining law, but it brought public employees into contributing to retirement, and
with the exception of police and
firefighters. That's a very important
point. It's a big
point.
Exception.
Yes.
And it's a sore point, I think, for a lot of municipal officials, because of course school districts in the same era were saving $400 or $500 million, but that's because their entire employee base was being covered.
Well, what people overlook, and maybe this is getting a little wonky and nerdy, but by keeping collective bargaining rules substantially the same for police and fire employees, you basically have to maintain two human resource tracks.
Yep.
You've got your classic 1970s collective bargaining over here, and you've got your post-Act 10 rules over here. You've created two classes of public citizen, in a sense, but more importantly, you haven't made local government's job any less complicated.
Does Lee have a position on, it's not really a hot topic, but you've heard the proposals that Act 10 should be amended or extended to police and fire. Does the League have a position?
The League has always supported that.
We
think all local employees should be treated the same.
Okay. There was a point in here, there's a reference to $125 million shortfall. Do you remember what? Explain that.
Yeah. Well, if if the revenues and expenditures were following the trend they were following, the argument with Act 10 is that the savings from Act 10 would replace whatever cuts that the state had put in place. And what we found in studies with schools and with municipalities is that the savings don't quite, from Act 10, don't quite cover, you know, existing trend of revenues and expenditures. So that's, so yeah, there's a little gap. And it's wider for municipalities than it is for schools because of the dual track personnel system.
Biggest surprise in this report? You commissioned it, Jerry. Biggest surprise?
Biggest surprise was a positive one, that local governments actually thought they were doing as well or better after 4 years under levy limits and other things than I thought they would be. I thought we would see some real dire financial circumstances. I don't see that.
So the state of cities and villages overall, would you call them good? Good?
I'm a Wisconsinite. I'd say pretty good.
Pretty good? Biggest surprise, Ty?
For us at the Alliance, no question, it was this stark difference between larger cities and villages, and large can even be 10, 15, 20,000, and these small ones of hundreds or 1,000 or 2,000. They're under more financial stress as municipalities. Their job growth is less.
Yes.
Their new construction, which allows them to grow their levy a little bit under state law, isn't there.
Right.
So, and this is really a story for all of Wisconsin, because we did a study of rural schools, and it shows pretty much the same thing. Rural, outstate, small town Wisconsin is not faring particularly well.
I want to land on that, because that's how your executive summary ends, and mm-hmm. I want to read it. In the larger municipalities where most Wisconsinites reside, job growth is occurring and civic engagement exists, at least to some degree. In some small communities, however, job trends are weak and civic health anemic. Now, let's talk about civic health,
yeah.
because that was a stat that also
surprised
me.
Yeah.
In smaller communities, 65% of the time where there is an elected job open, either one or zero candidate for that.
Yeah.
Why?
Well, we...
Should I ask that of Jerry? it deals with his members.
I actually am writing a piece on this, and so I looked not only at the data, but the verbatims, the things that survey respondents were adding in writing. And it's not surprising. The political divisiveness, the political polarization nationwide in the state has left people with a bad taste in their mouth, that they just assume that all government and all politics is going to be mean and nasty. They don't want to subject their families to it. You know, another thing is we don't have the population growth in these really small communities, so you're going to find it harder to find candidates because there may be fewer people in the community.
Jerry, when only one person or nobody wants to run for an elective office in a small community, what happens? Somebody walking by outside of the building is then drafted as the next village board member?
The village president goes down Main Street knocking on doors. There's a statistic, I think it's from WEDC, that in some of these communities, if you simply do the numbers, one out of every 25 residents has to take a position in local government. Somebody has to step up. So that's part of it. I agree with Todd that people's perception of public service has become somewhat stained. We also, and we're going to take a look at this within the league, are there different ways to engage your community? Can we change how local government looks, get people more involved in the budgeting process? Because, you know, at a well-run local village board meeting in the village of Strum, population 1,000 and change, village board meeting only takes about 45 minutes.
Right.
You know, we're not talking about a major investment, and yet to sustain that community, people have to step up.
64% of seats in small communities, either one candidate or no candidate. That really strikes me.
Oh.
Maybe last question, Jerry. This report, what is it going to do to shape the league's legislative agenda for the 17-19 session?
It emphasizes that we've got to fix the transportation issue. We have been talking and will continue to talk to legislators about flexibility under levy limits. I don't really know what that looks like. I will tell you that within the league itself, we're going to establish a task force on small communities, because Todd is right, there's a whole lot more to that story than we're telling today. So, but then the other thing is, let's respect our flagship cities. I mean, Milwaukee's doing great, Madison's doing great, Green Bay, Appleton. Those are the locomotives pulling this state, and in terms of a legislative agenda, my pitch is going to be, do no harm.
Okay.
You know, they're running, it's working, let them run. You know, I don't want to overlook some of the challenges we've seen, obviously, Milwaukee, other places. But from an economic perspective, those cities are our best asset right now.
But a report he did earlier this year, that on the personal property tax, $287 million, two-thirds of that is collected by the cities. Are you worried about the personal property tax? I know we could do another show on that, but we don't have the time.
Let's do a whole other show on
I
that
understand.
Because you better believe
will.
It.
You're worried about that.
I'm worried about taxpayers getting stuck with the bill, yes.
Are you shared revenue? Are you worried about being getting just the amount of money you got in the current biennium and not any uppers?
Resigned might be a better word
resigned.
For it.
Resigned. That's good. Well, okay. Thank you so much for the State of the Villages and Cities report, Todd.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank Jerry, thanks. Thank you. We'll be watching this. Thanks again. Mm-hmm. Thank you.